Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm back.
Hey, Fitz is back in town.
Technically. I'm still away, but we've made it work. I'm so excited to talk about this episode, Nancy. And I had so much fun listening to last week's episode with Savannah.
I really missed you. She's a treasure. I'm so happy that you're back. It was so cool doing the recap with Savannah. For anyone listening, please go back. She added like tons of color to what it's like to be on the other side of the show. I feel like it was a good prompt to like get some of the BTS stuff out of her that like is a little harder to glean in a one-on-one interview.
For sure. Because you don't want to rail them with questions like, and then what happens? And then in this circumstance? Yeah. It's just so hard to, there's too much to ask. Yeah.
Yes. Also last week, another banger of an episode, we had our interview with current Last Chance Kitchen champion, Bailey Sullivan, who was eliminated in week 2. We will cover this week's episode of Last Chance Kitchen in our second helping, but as of episode 3, she is the reigning champ. So definitely check out that interview. But let's get to episode 4 because it's awesome. But before we do, we have a quick semi-leftover, which is now that we're in episode 4, I think that we can officially announce our counters for season 22.
Let's do it.
So it's taken a little while to recognize the patterns of what we're seeing. And we're going to kick it off with something that I noticed, but Savannah really brought to the fore in last week's episode, which is we have our very first scallion pancake counter.
Wow. Yes. That was such a good flag on her part. There has been a lot of scallion pancakes. Nancy, how many scallion pancakes?
There have been 2.5 scallion pancakes. The reason why I say half is I don't know if by the technical definition something that happened in episode 1 is a scallion pancake, but let's call it 2 to be safe, to avoid any confusion. But so we're at 2 scallion pancakes, which I kind of feel like is 2 more than any season we've ever had. So it is of note.
Yes, very notable. What else is on our counter?
Okay, the next 2 are tied, but something that we have seen a lot of this season, and I think we're going to continue to see it, crumble.
Yeah, crumble of all kinds.
We've seen 4 crumbles on this season.
Wow.
I went back and I checked. But there were so – a lot of people are – and I think about like what we're having now in restaurants. Like people are loving a dusting.
Uh-huh. A dusting and a crusting.
A dusting and a crusting. And so for those wondering how I counted these, this week's episode with particularly the pretzel dust, I only counted it if they called it a crumble.
Okay, fair.
But there are arguably more instances of pretzel dusting in the crumble counter.
Reasonable.
Yes. Okay, and then our final counter so far. This is something that is sort of a variation on a theme, but I think is notable. And this is red meat tartare. We're not talking aguachile. We're not talking crudo. We're not talking fish tartare because we've had 2 salmon tartares so far. We are talking beef or lamb tartare, of which we have had 4.
Wow. Red meat tartare.
So that's where we are right now in season 4, season 22. We've got 3 counters, 2 of which already have 4 instances. Huge.
Incredible.
And those numbers do include episode 4, all the way up to episode 4. So that's all I have for leftovers. But without further ado, Bits, let's begin.
Okay, Nancy, episode 4, season 22, Amuse-Bouche Reactions.
Oh, once again, another banger of an ep. It was just fun from beginning to end. We had a lot of like Top Chef lore going on. And like, you know, it was a good episode for the fans, I think. And then we also saw some really good cooking. My one perhaps point of criticism in my Amuse-Bouche is the past 4 episodes have all been incredibly similar in Elimination Challenge format, and I'm getting a little tired of it. But we'll talk about that when we get to the Elimination Challenge. What is your Amuse-Bouche? Welcome back.
Thank you. I know. Truly, this was a fun one to come back to. I feel like my main takeaway is that the food looked visually arresting across the board. Oh. This is some stunning plates in this elimination challenge. And it made me think a little bit about the conversation we've had around – this is sort of random, but I'm going to bring it back to a point, which is, you know, we have covered a lot of recap seasons of Top Chef, and we like to kind of like poke fun at the, wow, I can't believe that was fine dining, or we were so obsessed with like putting shit on a plate like that. And I am really realizing that there is something really wonderful in watching food – just the plating of the present era and the present time. There's just a lot of creativity that it's fun to not ridicule. It's fun to just like appreciate being on the cutting edge of like what is a beautiful display of just culinary artistry. So I don't know. That's like a very heady amuse bouche, but
because I think that, like, you know, of course Top Chef follows the times, and it's like, where was a time, I think probably like sort of in the late 2010s, where it was very like home cooking forward, and it was like very accessible. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that was what was popular in cooking. And we even see that in like the shift in cookbooks to like this beautiful photography of dinner parties and like family style food, which is awesome and delicious and something that we all enjoy and benefit from. But I think what we are seeing now is a reflection of the food scene at large, going back to this fine dining. And I think
there's a finesse. It's a finesse.
There's a finesse. And they're like, I do think Buddha was sort of at the vanguard of this on Top Chef, but like bringing back, because early Top Chef was all fine dining, but like French, we're talking classics. And now there is a real return to form in terms of finesse, to use your word, but it's a little more interesting. It's a little more elevated and
just the
diverse
shapes, textures, lines, colors. Mm-hmm. There was a dish, I think it was Tristan's dish in the Elimination Challenge. It was so visually striking to me. This deep purple and these yellow delicate flowers. I don't know. I felt like I was watching an episode of Chef's Table, some of the plates that were coming up this episode. So, I mean, this is the world's longest amuse bouche at this point. We should get into the quick fire because this is decidedly a little less refined. But it was visually very delicious.
Yes. Okay. Well, before we get into the quick fire, in the spirit of the quickfire, Top Chef trivia, I was sort of hoping that it was going to be more Top Chef, comma, trivia, as opposed to trivia about food on
Top
Chef.
Same. I had the same thought,
in that spirit, Bits, I've prepared three real Top Chef trivia questions for you.
Oh, my God.
That I hope you can answer
about
as a true fan.
About to be canceled as like a – yeah, exactly. Here we go.
Okay. Number one, and I hope this is a gimme. What is Tom's least favorite vegetable?
Oh, my God. I was going to say mushrooms, but that's his most
favorite. That's my next question, which is, what is Tom's favorite vegetable? Okay. So you got that answer correct.
Okay. I got the favorite. Oh, my God. Least favorite.
Famously, this is a vegetable. It's actually quite popular in New Orleans. And
Course. Okra. Yes. He hates okra.
Hates okra. He's never met a preparation he likes on the show or off. Okay, so you have two of the questions correct.
Okay, love it.
The third one is a bit harder. It's more of like a guessing game, but then I think the follow-up you'll know, which is, of the 21 winners of Top Chef, how many are women?
Oh, my God. Okay. Stephanie, Kristen, Brooke. Oh, my God. What was her name? The very sweet woman who was the guest judge last season in Wisconsin from New Orleans, Top Chef New Orleans winner.
Top Chef New Orleans winner, there was Kelsey Barnard Clark, who was Kentucky.
I forgot about her. Four.
And then there's Melissa King, of course.
Wait,
and
we've had a lot.
There are six.
And okay, my follow-up question, I was at five.
Yeah, yeah. My follow-up question was, Mei Lin is whom we're missing.
Yeah. Yes.
From Boston, season 12. But my follow-up question was going to be who was the first, which you answered right out of the gate.
Okay, love that. But now I'm really what is her name? I'm gonna be really embarrassed that I'm spacing on this. Maybe we edit this out so I don't look so stupid. But she's like the very fun, whimsical woman, has her own cooking show now.
Oh, Carla.
Carla, thank you.
Oh, I love Carla. Unfortunately, famously, but she didn't win.
Right.
She lost herself. She lost her identity in the finale.
Ah.
It was devastating. But she is on our Mount Rushmore because we love her.
Oh, my God.
She's kind of a game changer chef testant, I think.
Yeah. She's a full-rounded personality.
Yeah, she's incredible. And she also, like, she was on Top Chef in her late 40s, I think. Like, she did a full career switch. And she talks about it a lot. Which is incredible.
That's unbelievable. Good for her. Yes.
Oh, okay, so let's really jump into it. Bits. Talk to me about Top Chef trivia quickfire.
Yeah, so I had the exact same thought as you, which was, oh, I thought this was going to be a sort of like self-referential situation. So the challenge this week was the chefs got 15 questions. They had all had buzzers. They self-organized into teams of four. Three teams of four, mm-hmm. and whoever got the most answers got 30 minutes to cook, the second most answers got 20 minutes to cook, and the team in last place got 15 minutes to cook. This challenge was also a $10,000 quickfire, quick cash challenge, so we had some cash on the line.
Oh, next week for leftovers, I can update how people are doing in the cash rankings. I'll make a note of that.
Yes. Okay, excellent. And then this is a bit of a they bury this lead, but I'll kind of like state it outright that essentially each of the questions have to do with food, obviously, or some – I don't know. Yeah, I would say food, not even preparation. Mm-hmm. And then that's essentially what the chefs have to work with. So for every correct answer, that's an ingredient that they then have to incorporate into their dish. Mm-hmm. Green team – blows it out of the water, basically just like dominates the first. I think they kind of just like kicked them out after they answered.
Yeah, I think
eight
they told them to stop after eight because they were like, the other people need to play so that they can get in.
Right. So, and we get a little bit of a shot of like Corwin boxing at the beginning. So I guess we're led to believe that his kind of reaction time is very precise.
I'm going to talk about that. A judgy table.
Okay, good. But yeah, this was a really fun challenge. We, of course, also had guest judge Michael Cera, which I think is still one episode early from what we predicted. The episode we'd see a Canadian celebrity, I think we said episode 5.
Yeah, but we also had Sara Levy in episode 2.
I know, but I think we both made that prediction with Michael Cera in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, we are wrong on both accounts. So it's fine. And then we also had some Jeopardy winners on here. So we had Amy Schneider, who famously has won like the most ever. I don't know. She's a beast. And then Mattea Roach. So talk to me, Nancy, about team rankings, ingredients we saw.
Yeah. So, okay, on the green team. The green team had scallops, nectarines, pistachio, I think jalapeno, chili crisp. They had a ton of stuff to work with.
Yeah.
It was interesting. The green team kind of all made the same dish, which was seared scallops with like a spicy nectarine thing.
Yep.
As we know, I'm not a huge shellfish girl, but I am the biggest nectarine girl you've ever met in your life.
Yeah.
Nectarine is my ultimate number one favorite fruit. There is no superior fruit in my mind. And so because of my love for nectarine, I would eat every single one of these dishes.
Yeah.
Put a nectarine in front of me, I will eat it in any preparation. So all of these sounded delicious, but the ones that really got called out were Schwei and Corwin. So Schwei made a nectarine salad. Oh, this sounded divine.
So good. So good. Oh, this is probably like one of the best sounding dishes of the whole episode in my mind.
Yeah. I'm also just like itching for summer and stone fruit season.
I know.
And so this really like got my spidey senses going. But his nectarine salad with like a Napa cabbage, jalapenos sounded great. And that, you know, widely agreed upon by the judges. Corwin was also called out in this group for his seared scallop chili crisp ginger beurre blanc with shrimp paste. Fascinating. I've never had shrimp paste, I don't think. Have you?
No, I have not.
But it clearly worked because Corwin was on the top for this challenge. And for the purple team, none of whom were on the top or the bottom. Actually, that's not true. One was on the bottom. Purple team had toro, which is fatty tuna, red curry, chimichurri, pretzels, and fennel. I think that might be too many ingredients.
I don't think they had – they did not have chimichurri. They had curry.
Sorry, they didn't have chimichurri. Fennel. Paula made a red curry chimichurri. Mm-hmm, I'm looking at my notes incorrectly. Yes. Toro, red curry, pretzel, fennel.
Yep.
And this is where we got a lot of crumbles, but they – for those who called it a dusting, it was not counted for those following along at home. So we had – Paula made a pan-seared toro, red curry, chimichurri. That sounded delicious.
That sounded very good.
Zubair, green curry emulsion, toro, dusted pretzels, fennel frond. Lana, tuna tartare, curry vinaigrette with a – pretzel crumble. And then Massimo, toro broth, yellow tomato, and then he said pretzel in French. Mm-hmm. So all of these sounded really tasty to me, but unfortunately Massimo's was in the bottom. They thought that the pretzels were a bit soggy.
Hate to see it.
Hate to see a soggy pretzel, but also like I feel like we can give him a pass for that.
Yeah, I think there was a bit of editing on this one. So okay. Great job, purple team. Yellow team, we had in sort of like bringing up the rear. They only got three ingredients, so they, of course, needed to use all those.
Mm-hmm.
Theirs were a little bit more – it was interesting because they sort of ended up with the closest to like preparation or opinionation on how to do the thing. Mm-hmm. So they had battered rice and sandwich. which is hilarious. And we definitely got like a bit of a hero edit for Kat for the quick fire, which rightfully so, because her sounded good, it looked good. I'm curious what you thought about, I feel like we saw a lot of rice vinegar as a workaround here.
Or like we saw rice flour being
used as the batter.
Honestly, I kind of liked all of it. I'm a bit surprised that we didn't get like a sushi sandwich. Like I know that that's egregious and an affront to like the art form that is sushi, but we see it a lot in New York City and it's delicious.
Yeah. Very
like
true.
I think that could have been fun and it can be a raw fish preparation.
Yeah.
It probably could have been done in 15, but actually they had to cook the rice. So therefore that was impossible.
True. So that's probably, that explains this.
Ben, that explains
there's
it.
There's no way you have that. Okay.
No way, Jose.
But all to say, super fun. We end up with Kat, Schwei, and Corwin in the top three, which was really fun. I was like glad to see somebody with the, you know, in Kat's face.
I'm really digging Kat. I think I'm really getting a sense of her.
This episode, I had the same note. I didn't want to like kind of take my whole amuse-bouche for that, but it was fun hanging out with her this episode.
Yeah.
There's a very distinct point of view that she has. It's just very funky and fun to watch.
I totally agree. And I think that she is really unpretentious. Like, she clearly is incredibly talented.
Yeah.
But I don't think she comes to the kitchen with the bravado of a lot of these really hard-edged, like, competitive chefs. And it's really nice to see her say, I just thought about it this way and, you know, I did what I thought was right. And it is – Sometimes it doesn't pay off. I think she was on the bottom a little bit at the beginning, but I think she's really coming into her own and finding ways to make Top Chef celebrate her style of cooking.
Yeah, and we always love rooting for, you know, a career pivot. I didn't realize how recently she was not a chef. Like, that's pretty impressive. No, I completely agree. And this was I'm glad we – not to hard pivot again, but I'm glad we got to spend so much time this – there was like a very fun lightness to this episode. And I do think that part of that was because of the guest judges with Michael Cera and just the energy of like the Jeopardy folks too was really delightful. But yeah, super fun quick fire. I –
The other thing I'll note is like, sorry, we're not trying to say like as much. We got a negative comment about our use of the word like. So preemptively, we're sorry for being millennials. but in general, I feel as though the chefs really like each other this season. There is a great chemistry among the cast. And they're really good standout characters. And that is just fun to watch. I mean, there definitely is a little bit of drama. We even got a like little peek into next week with Massimo. I think there might be some something brewing there. But all to say, these chefs are just charismatic and fun to watch. And they really are bringing a lot of energy to the screen this season.
Yes.
That is just a delight. On the bottom of this challenge, just to make sure that we cover off on it, we had Massimo, and then we had two of the battered sandwiches. We had Tristan and Henry. Tristan was sort of dinged for the flavors being disjointed, and Henry was dinged for the po' boy being a bit too unruly. But I thought that he had a great idea
that was around a
shrimp po' boy, and unfortunately was thwarted at a few.
Thwarted.
But Top Chef trivia is over. By the way, I agree. Michael Cera just brought a really delightful energy to this episode.
Yeah, he was thoughtful too. His deliberations were very, pensive, thoughtful. I think he sort of like weighed his words in a way that was you like to see, you know.
Yeah, it's nice when people kind of palate.
Yes, it's nice when people have confidence in their own palate when they come on.
So moving on to the elimination challenge, again, on the theme of Canadian dishes, we have yet another like sweet savory challenge. So the chefs are given seven different desserts, classic Canadian desserts, and they are asked to make a savory dish inspired by this sweet dessert. The desserts were Figgy Duff, butter tarts, Nanaimo bars, jam jams, potato chocolate cake, and date squares. I've never heard of any of these.
I mean, jam jams, I feel, are pretty universal. You know, they were kind of equating them to.
Yeah, to a Linzer tart.
With molasses. I also feel like I've been having so many of those cookies here in Italy. You know, just a sort of butter cookie with a jam on it or jam in it.
I can't even.
100 cookies this week.
I almost want to stop you from talking about what you're doing in Italy because I'm so jealous.
Shout out to Italy. Who would have known? It's a great food destination.
Surprise. Eating really well over here.
Can you believe it? Anyways, but no, completely, not to derail, I agree. I had never heard of any of these, which made this both interesting and maybe in a way less interesting because you sort of don't know the flavors of these desserts.
Yeah.
Maybe there's – I could see this being a little bit more – I'm splitting hairs here. But if I were to see a lineup of desserts that I had heard of, it probably would have been a little bit more fun to sort of pick apart and tease out what – how people were turning that on its head for a savory dish.
Yeah, I feel you. But so let's talk about what everybody made, and we're going to get into everybody. So we'll start with the Figgy Duff, which we had Tristan and Corwin. Tristan made Pepper Pot, which is a Caribbean stew, sort of like a Christmas stew, with braised lamb, madeleines, and grapes.
Yeah. His sounded incredible. His looked incredible.
I think the ballsiness of the Madeline was just so unexpected.
I love that it was just sort of like torn on the plate too. Like just kind of, dare I say, crumbled. It's not really crumble, but.
We got some crumble here, by the way.
This, judges loved it. We got a yum. We got a need the recipe. But Corin wasn't far behind either. This, I think, was the standout duo of dishes. Yeah. His jerk marinated fried chicken with miso raisin barbecue sauce. Mm-hmm. The spices came through well. It was tender. It was succulent. So I think both of them had a good command of the sort of flavor profile of Figgy Duff, and they cooked their meats well.
And I think that in particular, I noticed Tom in this duo was really blown away by the technical excellence of these dishes. In addition to the flavors being great and really following the prompt, he was just really impressed that they pulled it off to begin with. And with no notes, essentially, to use Savannah's words from last week. So it was just really nice to see them. And they were the first ones to pull the knives for Figgy Duff. Or, of course, they were the first ones to pull those ones. But all to say, they were both really perplexed by this challenge. And they came out swinging. So it was nice to see. Next, let's talk about the butter tarts. We have Henry and Zubair. So sort of the flip side of the Figgy Duff duo, both of these dishes perhaps were not executed as well as Tristan and Corwin's dishes. We had Henry, who made duck breast with brown sugar, corn syrup glaze, and mushroom crumb. And Zubair made a pecan achar seared duck breast with korma and wheat berries. Both making duck, which I thought was really interesting, and both really struggling with the duck.
Yeah, it's interesting they both ended up with duck. I also was sitting here thinking, in the grand scheme of all of these desserts, this one feels maybe the least fun or the least creatively inspiring, because it kind of feels like you just have butter. I don't know. Was there like a pecan element in the butter tart, or was that – it just seems very – yeah, maybe a quick Google on that one. Yeah. But everything else gave – there was either a spice or a fruit or
– Yes, it's effectively a pecan pie.
Okay. I guess that is – maybe I'm – maybe I take back then what I said. But I do think that some of the plates that either had like chocolate or spice or fruit, there was this more to – imagine, but it was interesting that they both went duck. That would not have struck me with a butter.
I think maybe the where richness. My head goes is pecan pie feeling a very autumnal dessert. I think duck goes very well with those types of autumnal flavors, perhaps. So maybe that's where their minds went. But unfortunately, the concept of their dish was overshadowed by the improperly cooked proteins. So they were coming up against, you know, some headwinds there. Now let's talk Nanaimo bars, which sound crazy.
Yeah, this one sounded super crazy. And we got two pretty crazy outputs. I don't know. Points of jumping off points. We saw Kat again. So Kat's just sort of like been on fire this episode. We have Paola as well. Kat's mustard custard. So she did a duck breast mustard custard. She made a crumble out of duck skin. Mm-hmm. She had a soy cacao ganache. So she, I just thought there was sort of like creativity all the way through this. Hers, to me, was one of the dishes that I'm thinking about when I had sort of my amuse bouche reaction as far as just the visual appeal of the plating this episode. It felt so cool. It went over very well with the judges at the table. It just looked fun. It seemed like it tasted fun, and it was just something to, I don't know, enjoy.
Yeah,
and Paola also did a good job, though. It was a surprise, not to shortchange on Kat, but just to hold up by comparison. Both tasted great. I think maybe Paola's didn't have quite the punch of chocolate. She did a braised pork belly, coconut vanilla vinaigrette, beets, and graham cracker.
Yep.
Do we count the graham cracker as a crumble, or is that
we do. She called it a graham cracker crumble.
Oh, good, good, good. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. We're getting crumbly this season. I'm telling you. I'm excited to see how many of these we get by the end. But because I also think crumble is kind of the new cop-out way to include like a monkey wrench ingredient. Last week we had Zubair do a blueberry muffin crumble. Like, okay, just throw it on the top. It'll be a little crunchy bit. You can kind of discern the flavor, but maybe not.
Yeah.
And it just adds a little texture. So I think that we're seeing some of these more difficult to work with ingredients turned into crumbles.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think there's something about just, I don't know, the use of texture here has been pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Let's talk about the Jam Jams.
Yum.
So essentially a Linzer tart with molasses.
Yeah.
We have Katiana and Shui. Katiana made a rye porridge with a molasses glaze, mushroom, and raspberry baking confit. In general, I think the judge's reception was that it wasn't executed. The porridge itself was not executed perfectly. And so the dish was a bit mushy, I believe was the word.
Yeah, Kristen was defensive to the extent where if you got a good bite, it was okay. But this one was maybe not in – in a room full of very strong standout dishes, it didn't seem to clear that bar.
Mm-hmm.
Schweiz also didn't. So this group kind of was a little bit flop city by comparison. His Sukune with raspberry pepper jelly, his chilled Napa with the hot mustard, I thought looked so cool. He sort of like had a almost like a coined, you know, he just sort of like bisected it. It looks stunning as always. I mean, I feel like I'm a broken record now, but they kind of didn't find the cookie in it, the meatball texture, which we got a little bit of a BTS moment on when he was doing the prep, was a mix of half raw meat, half cooked meat. That's very interesting. I'd never heard of that. So I guess that just didn't pan out very well, though. And it was super vinegary, which seems like maybe one thing to not do for a dessert reinterpretation. But that's tough, dude. I mean, whatever. I'd eat all of these, I think.
Yeah, there's no dish tonight I wouldn't have eaten. We can just start on that level.
I know we skipped over the Zubair and we'll talk about it again, but like even his, I wrote down, I was like, his duck looks insane. It looks so good.
Yeah. I think conceptually all these dishes seemed awesome and just speaks to the strength of this set of chefs. Let's talk. We've got a few more to go. We've got potato chocolate cake. This one was capital F-U-N. Like, Lana and Vinny, first off, I feel like they keep getting paired up a lot, which is sort of nice to, like, they were together in the first Quickfire Challenge.
Yeah, of course. Apple Bowl Gate. Dude, that makes so much. Every episode I see Vinny, I get more and more clarity on Apple Bowl Gate. And just. It all makes so much sense. He's kind of a sicko, like in a great way.
And he came to play as a certified sicko this week. By the way, for those listening, certified sicko is a compliment in our vernacular. It's a good thing.
You certified sicko Vinny
making roasted Yukon potatoes glazed with chocolate and miso, caviar vin blanc with gold flakes to reflect the Goldschlager in Superbad.
I love his kowtowing. It's not even kowtowing. It's just his nod to the diner.
Yes.
I think it's very old school cool just to be like, hey, you're here tonight. Let me make a little something special for you. I love that. I love it. And it's very tastefully done. Yeah, it's tastefully done. And yeah, when Michael Cera walked out, I was like, he looks like Vinny. So I'm glad they got a little bit of a moment of that.
First off, potatoes and caviar, delicious. This dish sounded like a heart attack on a plate, but I would eat it up. And then Lana made us a cacao and potato gnocchi, lamb sauce, and shallots. I thought this was a really cool idea.
Completely agree.
I really liked where – first off, gnocchi, I think a stroke of brilliance for this. And then maybe it was just like her sauce was a bit too rich, but I think that they found the whole dish a bit much, hard to finish, a bit heavy-handed. But you know, we
lamb
stand
sometimes
a flavorful
do be
queen.
Like that. Yes.
Sometimes a lamb ragu do be like that.
Doobie.
So we're still rooting for you, Lana. Thank you. Last but not least, we have date squares, Cesar and Massimo. The battle of the lamb tartars.
Yeah, it's a tartar. It's a lamb tartar off. It's a Moroccan off.
It's a Moroccan off. I mean, I'm really in my red meat tartar era, so I would eat both of these dishes. But Cesar made a lamb tartar, date and shallot puree, pickled carrots. The notes here were great texture, maybe a little bit too much heat, but he did a really nice job of incorporating the sweetness in this to harken back to his dessert. And then Massimo, again, a tartare, Ra's al Hanout crisp. Shout out Richard Blaze, the Ra's al Hanout king of Top Chef. And some yogurt.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
In every single episode of his All-Star season, he used Ra's al Hanout.
That's right. Oh my God.
And he was like, he was sort of Christopher Columbus, like, I brought this.
Yay. Look at this spice I brought from the Orient. Not from the Orient.
Oh my God.
I said that on purpose, just so everybody's clear.
Just everyone's clear. I understand the cultural origins of Ra's al Hanout.
So both delicious. Very kismet moment. Yeah.
So that's everyone. And I know we've talked at length, but I want to, you know, just give you the floor for 1 second. Which one of these was your favorite as a viewer?
Cat, for sure, Cat.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think it just, I don't know. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I want to hear.
No, I mean, I've said all that. Oh, geez. But now I'm scrolling and I'm remembering Tristan's.
I was going to say Tristan.
Yeah. All honestly, all of the top three. So we had Corwin, Tristan, and Cat. And I think was pure 100% overlap with my picks here.
Yep.
Sorry, I stole the thunder from you, though. But feel free to agree with everything I just said.
I wholeheartedly agree with everything you just said. Okay, Bits. So let's talk about judges table. On the top, as we said, we had Tristan, Corwin, and Kat. I was really happy to see Kat up there, sandwiched between these two dishes, because she had a great episode. And I think it's really fun to see when someone excels over the course of the episode and really starts building momentum. Again, I'm excited about the Cat crescendo we're experiencing right now.
Yes. And the Corwin and Tristan domination.
Yeah.
They're going to be – I have very high hopes.
Tristan's going to – they're going to go really far, all of them.
I was just disappointed that this was a disappointing episode as far as how the bottom worked out. But I don't have an alternative preference. There was no like good conclusion this week.
I completely agree. I mean, it was sort of heartbreaking to see these three people up for elimination, primarily because two of them are on our fantasy team. And the other one I just really like.
Yeah.
So we have Shuai, Henry, and Zubair up for elimination. And, I mean, we've talked about what their feedback was. But unfortunately, we have Zubair heading out.
I was pretty shocked.
But
again, I would have been shocked if the other two went also. Mm-hmm. I think part of me just thought, okay, maybe just no one can go now.
Yeah. Let's just keep them all here and
sucks.
Watch them
it
have
sucks.
Fun.
That was disappointing.
It was tough.
I really Zubair is one of those who knows, but Zubair seems like somebody that could come back into the Top Chef cinematic universe at a later. He just felt like he's gone too soon.
Maybe he's the Rasika of this season, cuz Rasika got out pretty early too.
Yeah, cuz she was really cooking and
she was super strong and then got eliminated. Oh my gosh.
Well, that just means that now I can go eat at Zubair's restaurant in Chicago when I'm there.
We gotta go to Chicago.
Gotta go.
Okay, Bits, would you eat that Zubair's duck dish?
Hell yeah,
I'd eat that.
And I don't even really like duck. I think that's one of my most basic food opinions. It's just I don't really like duck, but I'd eat it for sure.
I'd eat that for sure. We have the very exciting lead-in to Last Chance Kitchen where Tom says, and Zubair, Last Chance Kitchen starts tonight. And you can go back and tell the chefs that a new chef will be joining the competition tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
So this is the mid-season finale. Mid-season who? It's only episode 4. But this is the mid-season finale of Top Chef, where Zubair will square off against current dominating reigning champ, Bailey. And it's a two-part episode, which we will discuss on Second Helping. So we won't get into that.
Yum, yum, yum.
But Bits, why don't we round this out with a little game of Judgy Table.
Judgy Table.
Do you want to go first, Nancy, or would you like me to go first?
I'll let you kick it off this week.
Okay. Nancy, your Judgy Table starts now. These little montages at the beginning of the episode have got to stop. It's always a chef who is doing some sort of wellness exercise. I wonder if Bravo got like in trouble to like that they're keeping them trapped inside or something, because they're really making a show of people doing yoga or running, or in this episode, Corwin boxing. You know, like it just – it tees up who we know is going to be highlighted in the episode and kind of gives away who's going to do well in the episode, because the formula is now – opening wellness montage of person who does well in the quickfire. And then midway through, they have a bit of a montage of someone who might not do well later in the episode, which was Henry. And like, they're just giving it all away. Let us experience. I just think the editing might be a bit heavy-handed this episode in terms of telling the story.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. And I – Robin, eat your heart out.
Robin, eat your heart out.
But I feel you on that. I feel like the only thought I have to that is there's just so many people here. They need to help us focus our attention somehow, mm-hmm. or else you feel very I can see it being a little overwhelming. But all fair points. Mine's going to be very silly and stupid because, frankly, I'm a little out of practice.
And that's what we like here on Compliments to the Chef. So, Bits, your Judgy Table starts now.
Josh Wine. Where is my Terlato?
Yes.
This is Terlato, baby. Terlato City. Don't push this Josh Wine on me. There is already a Top Chef wine and it's Terlato. I don't care whatever this brand partnership is, whatever. Quick chase, quick fire, quick cash bonanza. I just wish there was a little bit of screen time for our favorite glass, Terlato. And I just love saying Terlato. And so maybe that's why this is my Judgy Table this week. But Terlato, we miss you. Look, like, Josh is fine. You know, Josh is okay. But it's no Terlato.
It's no Terlato wine caves.
Terlato wine caves. Oh my God, our wine angels.
The wine angels. Yes, that's what they were called. My gosh. I love that. And I'm so happy that you brought that up, because I have it in my notes. Like, what's with the Josh?
Yo, the Josh of it all.
The Josh of it all. Ugh, but with the Josh of it all, we close out this episode, episode 4 of Top Chef season 22. And we'll see you on our second helping on Monday and for episode 5 next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.